Welcome, OT entrepreneurs, to the OTs Get Paid podcast, episode 109. Today, we are discussing making the switch from a clinical job to a full-time OT entrepreneur. I know that most of you listening have done this switch. I don't know anybody, quite frankly, that has been an OT, graduated, and jumped right into entrepreneurship. So this topic is relevant for almost every single person listening to this podcast. Some of you haven't done it yet, and it's a whole new world, and you want to make this switch, and fear is holding you back. How do I know this? Because you've told me. Others of you will have made this switch, and maybe you're not yet full-time, maybe you're part-time. Or maybe you are full-time, but you want the support and you want to know that you're not alone. When I first dipped a toe into starting the OTs Get Paid brand and our coaching and our podcast, that was in about 2018. And I remember feeling very, 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 very alone. I was a silopreneur. I barely knew any OTs, much less OT entrepreneur. How are you going to explain that? So we share these interviews with other OT entrepreneurs so that we can learn from them. And some of our topics have a very, very specific point. And today's is more of inviting somebody who feels passionate about this switch to tell their story. So sometimes we're here to answer questions. Sometimes we give you steps to succeed and always to let you know that you're not alone. So we're going to highlight another amazing member of our OTs Get Paid community today. We have with us Melanie Batista, who is a PEDS OT with over 23 years of experience serving young children and families in a really wide variety of settings. And her passion is coaching parents and professionals, not just parents, but professionals as well, on the importance, and that has meaning going forward, of the importance of self-care, connection, movement, and play, all for that optimal brain development for both the caregiver and the child. And Melanie has created a company called Growing Little Brains, LLC, where she helps professionals and parents do just this. How? Through online courses, through her really popular blog, and her mentorship programs that are focused on early intervention. We are very, very lucky to have Melanie with us. Welcome to the podcast, Melanie.
Well, thanks for that introduction, Trish. I'm glad to be here.
I'm so glad. Well, you know what? Let's jump right into it. Tell us, how do you get paid? Meaning, tell us more about you that we might not have covered in the intro and exactly what you do.
Sure. So like you said, I am an occupational therapist. I have been for 24 years. This is my 24th year now. And I have worked in pretty much every setting you can imagine. I really tried them all. I was definitely the jack of all trades and the master of none. But early intervention is really, really where my passion grew pretty early on. And I left early intervention after just a few short years because I just didn't really feel like I was confident. I didn't feel like I was supported. And I left to go work in a hospital setting where there was lots of other therapists around. And that was a great move at the time. But my heart was always with the little ones. So I eventually made my way back there. And then I am also a mom of two boys. And after my first son was born prematurely, and I ended up in the NICU as a parent, and then ended up in the early intervention program as a parent, it really, really shifted everything in my practice and in my world, mm-hmm. both professionally and personally. And so I really started to view our field and our role very differently than I had previously. And all these discrepancies and things that I was seeing, now I just felt like I just needed to shout from the rooftops, like, we're missing things. We're missing the boat here. We're not doing this right. They didn't tell us this in school. And so I became pretty vocal about a lot of things. I was really struggling just in the like traditional practice sense of like, this isn't really working. Luckily, I did find a position where I worked on an in-house team in early intervention, and we adopted a parent coaching model. And that was like, oh my goodness, we're finally starting to bring this together. Now this makes sense. Now I have purpose. And I loved that job for a lot of years. And then my family moved across the country for more opportunities and to be closer to grandparents. And I just couldn't find that position here in town. I was lucky to meet a good friend who was a marketing person and kind of an online website designer, creator, genius. And she became like the driving force of like, you need to get online. You need to start spreading your message and all of your knowledge. And you need to have helped me so much as a mom. And I was helping all these other moms in my community. And she was like, you need to get online and do this. And I was like, I have no idea how to do any of that. I'm not a tech person. I'm not an online person. How do I do this? And so that was kind of like the infancy stage of why, I wanted to maybe attempt this. She planted the seed and it grew for a long time. I let it grow for longer than it probably should have. And then eventually it was like, okay, I'm going to do this.
So we talk about the fist on the table moment. And it sounds to me like the first one was the integration of your clinical practice in pediatrics and then going through it as a parent. What was the second fist on the table moment? So your friend shared the nugget. Mm-hmm. What kind of pushed you off the fence? Like what finally made you say, okay, I'm just going to do it. Do you remember what that was?
I think it was a lot of things that led up to it, but I also ended up working with Alicia Grogan, who's an OT. She had at the time was, I'd followed her and her blogging for a long time and just thought what she did was great. And I had taken a few of her courses and followed her blog for a long time. And then I had reached out to her and said, hey, do you ever show other OTs how to do this blogging thing? And she was like, you know, I've been asked that a bit lately, and I may be putting together something soon. So she actually did roll out a course for OTs that wanted to get into blogging. And so I jumped on that and took that. And then I was like, okay, now I have some tools to actually understand what this blogging world is about. And I think, you know, I'll give it a try. So
do you feel like you had a full plan from Alicia? I'm just looking up her site right now. It's called Your Kids Table.
Right.
Do you feel like she, I guess here's what the question I'm trying to ask is, do you feel like you left with like this 100 page plan and you just do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and I, or do you feel like she gave you some of the tools and then you still had to figure it out?
Definitely. It was a wonderful jumping off point. She covered a ton in her course and really gave us the foundation to start setting things up. And I obviously had the friend who was the tech support. Without her, that would have never happened.
Yeah.
But she helped me set up the actual platform and where the blog would live. And then Alicia gave me all the tools of like what goes in a blog post and what's SEO and all of this, the basics. And then, just lots of experimenting and then just sitting down and writing and writing and writing until I couldn't write anymore.
So tell me a bit more about the mindset shift that was required for you. And here's the reason I keep digging is because I am fascinated by what motivates those who are thinking about doing this into action. Mm-hmm. And I meet two very different types of people. I meet people that are like, I don't know, I just did it. Or people that tend to still be in the thinking stages and feel like really get stuck in their frontal lobes, feel like they need one more course, one more, you know, especially clinical. They're like, if I just keep being a clinical expert, then I can show up online or I can show up and start my own business, right? So I'm not sure if you were in either one of those camps or if you created your third, which is a true entrepreneurial move. So tell me a bit about that.
I think it was the third. I think I'm definitely just like, let's just try it and see what happens. I'm not like I'm not going to sit there and like overanalyze and like really get into the nitty-gritty of things. A lot of times I'm just going to see like throw the spaghetti on the wall and see if it sticks and let's just try this. I think I just had such a passion for helping families, and I just wanted both professionals and families to have a better experience than I did. And so I just felt the need to get out there. And then when I had a few connections of like, oh, now you actually have some tools to get out there, let's just, I mean, it really kind of just started as a hobby, as like a part-time, like, I'm just going to throw some blogs together and see what happens. And I think still probably in my mind at that point, like, I knew that I wasn't looking to, like, in my mind at that point, if I think back, I wasn't looking to be an OT entrepreneur. I wasn't looking to be an OT business owner. I was looking to have an outlet to get my thoughts and my views on everything I had experienced into the world to be helpful to others. And then fast forward, right after I was set to launch, and then there was some sort of like hiccup with the website, and I got like this 60-day delay because of my domain or something. Again, technical stuff, I think. So I don't know what it was.
It's the Seinfeld, but yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, yada, yada, yada. And it was like January 1st, you're going to go live. And then all of a sudden it was like, you can't go live until March. And then enter 2020. And we all know what happened. So COVID hit. And at the time I was working as a telehealth OT. I'd already been working telehealth for a couple of years because, like I said, I moved across the country. I had licensure still in Colorado, but not in the state I was residing. And a lot of personal events happened, and so I needed to work, and I found this remote position. So I was working doing teletherapy at the time. And then COVID hit, and the entire world went into working remotely. And so now all of a sudden I was having all these OTs reach out to me like, you do telehealth? Oh, can you help us? And so I had gone online to do one thing, but now all of a sudden I felt like I was being called to help a different group of people. And so then my blog and everything I did for quite some time, for like a good year or two, was really focused around telehealth and providing support, blog posts, you know, all sorts of products and digital products to help other telehealth therapists. And that's why a lot of people were finding me and reaching out to me. So then it was like, I had to kind of rebrand and and take another turn when we started going back to in-person, and now really getting back to my main focus, which was early intervention and really helping our littlest all along. So yeah, it's been a journey, and it definitely, what I set out to do was not what I ended up doing for a bit. And then it has morphed and shifted more times than I can even count at this point.
Which, you know, to somebody that is like, you're in the growth phase, right? And I think that's very, very relevant. If you were in the scale phase where you were trying to do one thing and grow it to seven figures, that would be a detriment. But at this point, seeing it as a superpower, right? To see where this takes you, see again where your passions lie. And, you know, as much as I hate the word pivot because it just throws me back to lockdown, you know, I think that's a bonus. And the other thing I want to highlight, because you said it so matter of fact, and yet I want to highlight it not just to you, Melanie, but to everybody that's listening, is that Melanie had a voice. You used this phrase way before you even started talking about your own business. You said, I started to use my voice, or I had a voice and I wanted to share, back when you were in the clinical land. And I feel that that's really the impetus for so much of this. So many people who are leaders in the field, who have an online presence, have a presence in OT entrepreneurship, some of them are not getting paid. And, you know, at OTs Get Paid, we're all about making sure that you make money off of this. But like, having that voice really is important, because just picking an idea out of the air to start selling it for selling its sake doesn't keep you going in the bad times. So tell me about this voice of yours. Have you always had solid opinions and then been comfortable to share them? What's been the journey of the voice?
I'm laughing because I just had a conversation with one of my girlfriends last night, or not last night, this morning, actually, on our morning walk, about the difference in Southerners and Northerners. And
in the United States.
In the United States.
Because okay, we have people and that listen from all over the world. So I just want to ground you. Yeah.
So for the audience who's listening, who's like, what is this about? Generally speaking, and we got into a little bit of a heated argument. It's a good friend, so we can do this, but
love it.
Southerners are a little, you know, a little more sweet, tend to be to your face, but my experience has been that that's not always what you get. Mm-hmm. And so there is a teacher at my child's school right now who's a Northerner, and she's a little rough around the edges, but she tells it like it is. You know, Northerners typically just, they're going to tell you how they're feeling. And that's just, you know, matter-of-factly, and we're just going to let you know that. And so there's no guessing, was my point to her. It's like, I don't have to guess what she's thinking. She's a very good communicator. She effectively tells me what she needs. She's not always warm and fuzzy, and the kids don't really like her sometimes, and they call her mean. But I appreciate that she is on top of things. She's organized, and she just lets me know, like, if she needs something. It's not beat around the bush. It's like, I don't have to guess. There's not reading between the lines. Whereas sometimes with the other personalities I encounter in the area in which I live now, it can be a little bit more reading between the lines. So anyway, we had a little nice discussion about that and how she felt like it was my perspective. And I said, no, I don't actually think it's a perspective. I think it's a reality. It's the lived experience that I've lived here, just the people that I've met who have grown up here. Typically speaking, that just has been my actual experience. So the voice, to go back to your question, I think the voice comes from how I grew up and the culture in which I live, because we just had this conversation. She's like, well, you know, why do you think that? And I said, well, because when I grew up, I was surrounded with people who would tell you the truth. Whether that was going to hurt your feelings or not, you were going to get the truth. So it's hard for me when I don't get that reciprocated. And I think because of my upbringing, I have always had a voice, and I will always tell the truth, sometimes to my fault. And that sometimes also that makes people not like me, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. Take it or leave it. I'm going to give you the truth. And the truth may hurt sometimes, but I'm still going to give it to you. So the voice, I think, was just something that's been instilled for me since I was young, of just, you know, there's an issue, we hit it head on, and we're going to talk about it, and let's problem solve. Like, I've just always been a problem solver, and I always want to know why it's not working and what can we do better. And, yeah. So that those are things that light me up. Like, well, you have a voice, you know, and I think it's hard for me when I see others in our field sometimes that feel like they don't have that voice, or they can't voice that, or they can't say that. Yeah. My voice gets me in trouble sometimes. That's true.
But... You know, what a great way to answer that question. Thank you. And just again, for context, you are in the state of Florida, which would be
South Carolina.
Oh, South really Carolina. South. Okay, so you are in the South. Okay,
true. South.
Why did
yes.
I think you're in Florida? Okay, so you're in South Carolina. Got it. Okay, so I just wanted to give context to that. And for mm-hmm. people who are, you know, we have people in the Philippines to listen, we have people in Australia. You've just gotten a little micro lesson on
that's right, on culture.
On culture in the United States. So I actually agree with your sentiment. I lived in the United States, I only lived in the North. But my point is, I believe that every OT has a bajillion opinions, but not every OT is comfortable with sharing their voice. In my experience, it's because people think that OTs create outcomes or get hired due to likability. And you can't sell likability. People will fire you for likability. People buy for outcomes. People are happy with your service for the outcomes that you're getting for your peeps. And the amount of times I have told people that, you know, be likable, don't be likable, but that seems to be like an OT default. And then we get confused with likability and our value, right? And so I'm here to kind of shout that, use my voice and say, you know, that's not true. Your likability is not why people buy from you or why they hire you. And I will also say, having dipped my toe back into clinical in the last little while, so I'm having my 30th OT reunion this summer, which is bonkers to me. So I've had like a gob ton of experience. And I'm hearing something different this time around. So the last time I really did clinical was like 2019, 2020. And I'm hearing it consistently. And that is, people are like, oh, I was told to come to you because you tell it like it is. And I never thought of that as a strength of mine, but parents are hiring me because it's a strength of mine. And so, and that's how I got in this in the first place, was like people were reaching out to me and saying, hey, you built this clinic in Calgary, will you help us? And I had a heck of a lot of opinions, and I wasn't afraid of voicing them either, because I wasn't also afraid. I knew I would get some people that liked me and some people that didn't. My daughter and I were talking a lot about that this weekend, and we kind of went back to the saying, oh, no, it wasn't my daughter. I was walking with a friend and we were trying to figure out who said this, and I don't remember. We never figured it out. But it's like, if you stand for everything, you stand for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to stand for something.
Right. Yes, I've heard that too.
Let it be known. I'm going to say it's Theodore Roosevelt, but I have no idea. It's either that or Mark Twain. Those are the two people I think say a lot of the quotes in North America. And maybe somebody's like yelling at their car, because most people listen to this in the car. They've told me, they're like, this is who said it. But again, so I'm trying to instill that in my children. Like yesterday, I literally gave this feedback to my 20-year-old who is on a gap year working. And she told me about an incident at work. And rather than getting in the weeds, I said to her, oh, you used your voice. Do you do that with your own children?
Absolutely. Yeah. From a young age, like anytime they have concerns at school, we say, you need to use your voice and talk to your teacher. Like, I'm not the mom that's going to call the teacher and say, why is my kid not blah, blah, blah. Mm-mm. And when we had some real concerns a few years ago, and he just didn't feel, he was, I guess, in second grade at that point, and he just didn't feel like he had his voice yet. I said, well, then you can write down your thoughts in a note, and then I will send your teacher a message to just look for your note, that you have written her a note and that she can read it, and then you can have time to get together and talk about it, but I'm not coming there with you. So I think it's so important. I think it's just the way that I was raised, and I just know how much that's afforded me. And I think, like you, I didn't see it as a strength. I didn't even know that it was there, because it was just part of me from such an early age. But then as you go into adulthood and you have job after job and you meet people I've lived in lots of different states and lots of different places, and you meet lots of different cultures and places, and you go, oh, wow, not everybody was brought up that way. Like, mm-hmm. not everybody does feel comfortable voicing. I think about, you know, just a lot of, I sent out an email this morning just about some of the teachers that I worked with last year who, you know, they're living in some or working in some really tough circumstances right now. And a lot of them don't feel comfortable to voice and don't want to rock the boat and don't want to say anything. But at the end of the day, it's affecting their mental health. Mm-hmm. It's affecting their physical health for some of them. It's affecting the children in which they're trying to serve. You know, it affects so much more than just the individual. You know, it's the whole system that becomes then dysfunctional, which is what our conversation was about. Like, where do you even start? Because it's so dysfunctional. But I think it starts with you having your own voice and finally, you know, feeling where your boundary and where your limit is and setting it and then sticking to it, not letting somebody go, oh, all right, well, I'll just, you know, I'll stay one more hour or I'll write one more report tonight. And, you know, just, yeah, some of the conditions in which we work, I say that often to other friends that I have in other areas and other industries, I go, the circumstances and the work conditions in which we subject ourselves to would never fly in any other area of business. Like, why do we let that happen as therapists? I think that to myself a lot.
Yeah, I do too. But which I think people, sorry, Melanie.
No, I do think it comes down to just our profession as a whole attracts people who are nurturing, caring, empathetic, mm-hmm. people who want to help. But then we mistake that for needing to be subservient or weak mm-hmm. or, you know, like just letting somebody else have the control at the expense of our own health. And yeah, I don't know why that keeps happening, but it is a pattern that I've noticed for quite some time. And I do think it's getting worse only because some of the conditions in our work places, because of insurance, because of public school systems and lots of other factors that are outside of our control.
Yeah.
But yes, time.
Well,
time
I was really
for us
validated when I found out that I was an Enneagram 2-3, and an Enneagram is that classic helper, but the 3 is, you know, I forget what the 3 is called. Wow, it's been a while since I've looked at it. I think it's kind of like the action person. And I actually felt like, oh, because I was torn to be like, I'm just supposed to be quiet and help, and I've got all this inside me. And so when I found out that that was like legit, I then was super validated. Now, I had already started making moves into entrepreneurship, but I was like, oh, that's why. So it almost gave me more of a platform to be like, I can be both. But my point is, before we go on to my next question for those that are listening, is that, you know, there's almost like, I feel that the people that are stuck or growing really slowly and stuck are like, I need to know more. I need to have more spreadsheets or more this or more that. And that's actually not true. It's not the knowledge translation that you need. It is the values and the voice and the things that tick you off that you need. It's like, what is burning inside you that you would talk about it for free? Or that, what's that prompt I've seen on TikTok before? Like, what could you talk about for 30 minutes with no notes? Like 100 things, right?
Right.
And so pick one of those things as opposed to like, oh, I need this. I need, like, don't make it complicated. So get quiet and listen to those values.
Yeah. It's the same thing I preach. I love that you said that, because it's the same thing I preach, you know, in my mentorship programs, is that we don't really need more knowledge. I think we get stuck, especially as a newer therapist in the field of, I just need to take another course, or I need to take a certification, or I need to know more. Mm-hmm. But it's really not about more knowledge. It's about applying what you already have and having a framework and just like leaning into the process. It's never going to be perfect.
Exactly.
And yes. Oh. And so I love that you brought up Enneagram. So can you guess mine?
You know, it's been a while. honestly, it's been a while since I've looked. I'm going to go with, are you an 8?
I am an 8.
Oh, yes. Okay. I'm competitive enough that I didn't want to fail. Okay. Tell people that don't know what an 8's all about.
The 8 is the challenger. The 8 is the challenger that wants to, you know, kind of rock the boat a little bit and do things a little bit differently, kind of beats to their own drum. And I laugh because I didn't know anything about Enneagrams, but I took that, I guess a few years ago. And recently it came up in a women's group that I attend, and we did them again, and I took a different quiz, and I said, oh, let's just see what it comes out, you know, and it came out 8 again. So I was like, all right, well, it
can't
hasn't
leave it behind.
It hasn't changed.
Well, and that's great, because, you know, at the end of the day, you need to build the business that works for you. And so 8s build businesses, 3s, like the other part of me, build businesses. That's called the achiever. I looked it up too. And challenger and the achiever. So we're going to build businesses. And yet, and I don't want to get too much into this right now, because I want to ask about income in the next question. But, you know, it's like an 8's going to build a different business than a 3, even if we built the exact same business. A southerner to a northerner, like, you know, or like an OT to a physio, like, it still has to be you. So stop fighting it. Get out of your frontal lobes, like, be who you are and create businesses. And that, I always say that I did it like a bull in a china shop, because it's the only way I knew how. And it's very, my business is very Trish, right? And so don't let that stop you. There's no one way. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about the income and the impact goals for your company, maybe this year, and project ahead for us.
Sure. So Because I joined the road to 100K. I would love to get to 100K. I think they put that as like my 2-year goal. But this year, I really would love to hit 50. That would be a big number for me. And that's what I'm striving for this year. Impact wise, I really want to grow. I have two programs, two mentorship programs. One is a small group mentorship for newer OT to early intervention. And then my second program is a yearly membership, really for any early interventionist, but they are mainly OTs as well. And that runs for a whole year. And so I'd love to grow both of those programs this year. That is my main focus. That is what drives me and keeps me going in those hard days, because I love mentorship. I love empowering newer therapists to the field, and I just love to see their practice get off to a better start than mine got off to. So
Yeah, I'm not familiar again with the EI system in the US. And again, it's not to talk about one specific system, but I do know that it's a toughie. And we don't need to get into it if you don't want to. But I've heard that because EI is more of a general term here, like early intervention, as like make sure you get resources in front of kids as soon as possible. But my understanding of the US is like it's called EI. Like that's how you deliver that program. And it's like a burnout, it's a road to burnout, and there's just massive expectation. So, for those who are listening that aren't as familiar with what Melanie is talking about, it's like that place where people in the US work for that delivery of service. And so, let's really get into the hook of things, which is talking about that switch from being a clinician, having that amazing job, not being able to find it, being an EI, and then feeling like, okay, now I need to be into a full-time OT entrepreneur. So you kind of touched upon it. You touched upon getting into blogging and put it out there. Tell me what happened after that. Paint a little bit of a picture between that to now, and then I have some specific questions for you.
Sure. So I would say that pattern carried on for about 4 years, where I had like my main full-time job. I did telehealth during the day, and then I worked on the blog and the business at night and on weekends. And then I took a job, a full-time position, school system here locally. I was really, really missing the face-to-face and the direct patient care after 3 years of being online, and then through a pandemic, stuck in the house. So I was really feeling like I needed to get out of the house. And it was good at the moment, but the school system was not optimal for me, especially as a type A challenger. They don't really know what to do with a challenger in the school system. They kind of want you to just, they want you to roll over and play dead. And I just wasn't going to do that. So it didn't work out so well for me. I live in a small town, so there's not really a ton of opportunity. I had tried my hand at EI, but it runs a little bit differently here. And being in clients' homes just wasn't really working out for me either here, with the model that they do here in South Carolina. So I knew that it was go back to a job this fall that I completely was miserable at and was causing me to have a lot of mental and physical symptoms with, or I could just go all in and see if I could make this happen on my own. So I did leave the position in August and went all in on the business starting August. So that has kind of been my main focus. And I have fully adopted the hat of like OT entrepreneur. I feel like I've definitely hit the point where there's like no turning back. Like I'm too far in that
Yeah.
there's no turning back
Now it's like,
now.
which current do I want to swim against? Do I want to swim the
Where,
downstream current or
yes,
the upstream current? Because
that I am definitely, I often say I feel like I'm the hamster on the wheel right now. I'm doing all the things and trying to wear all the hats and trying to figure out and prioritize and how do I make this work, and what do you prioritize this week versus next week? And lots of great things have happened in the last couple months, and I definitely feel much better. It's amazing. Like 3 months' time, right? I've been at the business for almost 4 years prior to this August. And in 3 months' time, I feel like I've grown, you know, maybe the business income hasn't grown significantly yet, but I've grown as an entrepreneur, and just, I know so many more things. I feel so much more confident. I have a lot more skills. I have a lot more network around me. So I do feel like I'm at a better place there. Now it's just pulling it all together to make those goals become met.
Let's get specific, if you don't mind. Let me challenge you to give us the top three things that you did when you talk about having a lot of change. And it can be within this last 3 months, or it can be looking back over the 4 years. But what would you say are the top three things that have put you into a better place as an OT entrepreneur?
So let's see, if I had to think about three, I mean, for sure, mindset, just wrapping my head around, like, I can do this, you know, and, you know, it doesn't have to look perfect, and just keep going, right? Like, just, I have to tell myself that, just keep going. I think, you know, joining the road to 100K for sure, just being able to be around like-minded people who are in the similar stage as myself, and then getting mentorship from someone who's been there, walked it, done it. I mean, that's invaluable to just know that every week I'll have a place to go when I get stuck. And also for you guys to push me too, when I need to get out of my funk. And let's see what else. I wrote a couple things down. Let me look here.
While you're looking, I'll say thank you for mentioning the road to 100K. I didn't even pay you to say that.
No, you didn't pay me to say it, but I did, because it's
for an eight.
It's true.
You would never tell them what to say ahead of time.
It's true. They would challenge you on it.
They would challenge you on it. Okay, so we've got two. We've got your mindset. We've got joining the road to 100K because of being surrounded by those like-minded people and having mentorship, somebody that's, you know, done the road, will hand you the roadmap, and support and challenge. So what would your third one be? What pops out?
It's funny because I wrote some things down, but now I can't find them.
That's okay.
So now I'm trying to think.
There's no perfect answer, just one.
There isn't. Sometimes the brain goes numb and dead. Yeah. It might be at the moment.
Well,
I'll come back
fine.
To that one.
That's okay. You actually talked about prioritizing. You mentioned the word prioritizing a number of times.
Would yeah.
So I'm wondering if that is one of the third thing, the things that you've done that's really helped.
Yeah, that has definitely come out of, you know, having some of that mentorship in the group of like, what do I need to prioritize? I think for a lot of the times it feels very overwhelming still. Yeah. I mean, I have certain weeks that are better than others, but some weeks it does feel overwhelming of like, oh my goodness, which hat should I put on right now? Yeah. Should I do the marketing hat? Should I do the content creation hat? Should I do the AOTA proof provider hat? Yeah. Do I do the email hat? So I'm not sure that I have like an exact system for that, but I do have much more of a system than I did. I'm much more consistent with what I'm putting out there, and it feels like there's more of a flow for sure.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I remember vividly sitting in my clinic. I mean, I can picture the light as it's coming in my office. I can picture the sound. I can hear the sounds of the clinic, and sitting there and being absolutely exhausted by the changing of the hats. And it was literally, maybe that should be like, I should create a program called that. Like, the changing of the hats fried me more than anything else. And with that comes the never-ending to-do list. So one of the things that we've talked a lot about and in the program that I'm thinking was helpful is been like putting labels to this. Like, it's not a never-ending to-do list. There is marketing levers to pull, and there is operations levers to pull, and there are financial levers to pull, right? And then even just chunking them out and having goal set, because again, you can't do it all. So moving from a never-ending to-do list into more like project management and knowing that you've got systems and what to pull. I know that when I finally started to figure that out, and something that we've also focused on lately in the road to 100K, really settles us. So we still are developing the systems, but there is that. Do you have that more settled feeling inside? Like, oh, okay, I'm still overwhelmed, but it feels like it's at least got some categories, right?
Yes, I think at least I'm identifying categories now, whereas before it just felt like complete overwhelm.
100%.
It was just like you said, that never ending to-do list that I felt like I could never get to. But now I feel like I can at least categorize those to-dos. And I'm like, that's not this week. That's like next week, or that's next month, you know? Whereas I felt like before I had to do everything this week. And when I didn't accomplish it, I felt like a failure. Like, oh my gosh, like I didn't do that, and that. And then it snowballed into the next week. So it felt like this big snowball that just kept running down the hill. Wow. Now I'm like, you know what? That doesn't really need to be done right now. That's a long term. That's, you know, 3 months from now, or that's a 6 month. But this is what needs to be done this week or today, even. Now I'm definitely more of a, I'm looking at it day by day. Instead of like even the whole week, because sometimes the whole week can feel really overwhelming too.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I'm actually thrilled to hear that feedback. I might add, because it just popped in my brain as you were talking. First of all, I'm thrilled for you because I do that too, and it makes a world of difference. I wonder, has it also happened in your life? Like, here's an example of today. I walked past the fruit bowl and the fruit bowl is empty. And like, some of the discipline of entrepreneurship, although I still am a bull in a china shop, that's still a superpower. I'm just going to say it. I'll just try things. Goes, oh, like, I don't know if this is going to be relevant, or tell me if I'm like, well, you will. You'll tell me if I'm Cracker Jack. But it's like, I don't freak out that there's not bananas today. Or there's not fruit. Like, I don't actually think we have any fruit. We're a big fruit household. And I'm like, you know, that's going to be a Friday problem.
Yeah.
Do you Do you find that it kind of seeps over?
Yeah, I do think because now everything is one, right? Like I work from home.
Yep.
I live at home. I take care of my kids at home. Like I have to do all the other mom things that moms do. And so now I try to chunk it into like, okay, this is what can happen or when it's going to happen for personal. I'm trying to separate more like personal and business. Cause I feel like the first couple of months, it was very easy to be like, well, we'll just do the laundry. I'll just do the dishes. But now I'm like, no, this is the time to focus on marketing, or this is the time that I'm focusing on email, you know? And so I'm also scheduling like, no, Wednesday mornings are like me time now. Like Wednesday mornings, I schedule lunch with friends or breakfast with friends, or I take an extra long walk, or I go out and do shopping or whatever it is, so that that's blocked on my calendar now. Like can't touch it. Nope. Sorry. I have plans Wednesday morning.
Good for you.
Cause it was very easy to feel like, well, I'm at home and my schedule is really flexible. I can do it whenever.
It's a slippery slope. I've looked at my kids a couple of times when they've tried to come to me, and I'm like, this is a totally true story. And I'm like, I would never say, can't you see I'm working? But for emphasis sake, let's say I said that. Can't you see I'm working? And my kids would be like, you're doing the laundry.
Right.
I'm like, yes, but in between working. And I finally realized, like, I mean, it wasn't an impetus, but part of getting more organized and prioritizing and, you know, chunking things out was also so that I would be in the office, right? Or when I'm out, I'm out. When I'm having lunch, I can have lunch. Right.
Right.
And I found that was helpful for like managing the expectations of the kids who lived with me, because they'd be like, you're not working. You're actually sorting whites.
Right. Like,
but my head, I'm working. Mm-hmm. And I'm going back up in a second. So
that's right. It takes a lot of discipline to work from home, number one, but then also to run your own business. I think because you're on your own. There really isn't anyone, you know, looking over you saying, did you meet that deadline? Or is that report done? So they'll tell you
if they need bananas, but exactly.
Right. Well, yeah, I shouldn't say that. I do actually have two bosses in this house who tell me, why is dinner not ready? And
that too. Well, thank you so much for diving into those things, the challenges, and then the things that were helpful to make the switch. Yeah. What I'd love to do as we're wrapping up is give you the rapid fire questions at the end. our money making, breaking questions. How does that sound?
Yeah, I'll try. I'm going to hope my brain will work for you.
Yeah. And you know what? It's all good. I found estrogen for me personally very helpful for my brain fog, FYI. Nobody asked, TMI, but I'm going to share. But again, it's rapid fire. You don't need to go crazy. Okay.
Good.
So there's one, two, there's like three. Okay. What is your biggest personal money splurge?
Personal money splurge. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I'm the worst at this because I don't splurge on myself ever.
What about in the family?
In the family vacation, we Perfect. Will splurge on vacation all the time, but I'm like the worst. Like,
well, you're my part mom, of the family.
Yes. But like my mom gave me money like for my birthday. And she was like, now this is just for you. Yeah. And you have to spend this on something for you. And guess what? It's still sitting in my drawer. Yes.
Hey, I took, I was in a mastermind for a year, and the person who ran the mastermind was just an exceptional, exceptional marketer and ran like an 8-figure business. But she said something really interesting, and it was mostly women in her programs. And she said, so I'm jumping from your rapid fire to a really interesting marketing point, which is why I want to share it. And she said, like rebates or, and we can't do a lot of that because they're kickbacks in healthcare, but like gifting people money or gifting them savings or like, hey, here's a bonus. You saved X amount or referral fee because you gave us this client. We're going to give you X hundreds of dollars. She said that will sit in an account and people won't spend it often or the average entrepreneur will just go and pay a bill with it. Mm-hmm. So she actually now firmly is in the camp of gifts, and her gifts for her programs were like really robust. I don't think they're OT gifts at all, like Louis Vuitton bags and stuff. I don't know a lot of OTs that are like motivated by that. Right. But I just thought that was so interesting because if you're thinking with a marketing brain, you have to think about your ideal client and what would be of real value to them. And her POV was not necessarily money. Right? Because a gift, now it has to be the right gift and therefore you need to know your audience. But yeah, that just popped in your brain as I was talking about it. Where was your last holiday?
We just went to Tennessee, to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. We went skiing, which is not really skiing, but
I live in the Rocky Mountains. It's okay. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. We used to live in Colorado Rockies.
Exactly. I was just going to say that.
So Tennessee skiing. Know. Yeah. But anyway.
Okay. Tell me about your biggest business-related splurge.
Business-related splurge, for sure. The biggest splurges so far have been OTs Get Paid. And then I took Stu McLaren's membership course.
Yeah, Tribe. Yep.
Tribe. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good.
So those
are
the two.
Is that still up and running? I wonder about
that. Yes. He does it like every spring, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, once a year.
Because you run a membership and that's like, he's the membership person.
Right.
Okay. Second question. Where do you have paid and or unpaid help in your life?
Paid and or unpaid help. Let's see. So paid help. I don't have any paid help in my business at the moment, but I am thinking about potentially a VA. And I was just talking to somebody this morning. So that is fun to come. Unpaid help. I've been really fortunate that I have a wonderful friend who is a website designer. So she helps all the website stuff so far. And I promise I'm going to pay you back when I actually make money someday. Mm-hmm. And I also have a marketing person that I was just using that we were exchanging services. So on the side, while I'm up and trying to get this business sustaining my family financially, I paint. So I paint furniture and I do interior painting. So we have been exchanging services for her branding and marketing help for the business. And then I did have a paid person back in 2020, 21, when I was doing more like Pinterest stuff. So I had a Pinterest VA back then, but I let her go in 21 because I wasn't really seeing a lot of return of investment on that. So
fantastic. Good for you. Yeah. I love that you highlighted that because that's so important. We often fire slow and hire fast, and it should actually be in reverse. Mm-hmm. So love that. Okay. Last question. If I could wave my magic money wand and put 7 figures into your business right now, what would you do with it?
Please do. Can you do that?
Sure, tomorrow. Hey, did you actually, okay, so as a total aside, Oh, wait, maybe I just took this way too far. I'm going to keep going with it. So I'm a huge musical theater nut, and last night I couldn't sleep, and I either watch figure skating videos or musical theater. And do you know the song Popular from Wicked?
I probably do if you
Okay, well,
hummed
there's
it.
two people that are following me on this, so I'll wrap it up really quick. In the song Popular, she takes Glinda, who's the good witch, takes her wand and tries to change Elphaba, who's the soon to be the Wicked Witch of the West, change her black dress into a ball gown. And then it doesn't work and doesn't work. And in the script, you're supposed to tap your wand and go, "Is this thing on?" And I was watching like various different musical theater performers do it, and they each did that line really differently. So that's why my brain leapt to that. Knock, knock, knock. Is this thing on?
Yes.
So, okay, it's on. So
Okay. It's on. Good. So
I'm
wave
waving my
it.
wand. Thank you for going down that rabbit hole with me.
Yes. First thing I'm going to do is pay myself. I'm not going to lie.
Good.
I am going to pay myself, and then I will invest it in marketing because I really, really don't enjoy the marketing piece of things in the business. So I would hire somebody to do that. That's the first person that's going to be hired when I hit it big, big enough.
Beautiful. Big enough, bigger.
Bigger, yes.
Okay, Melanie, as we're wrapping up, can you please let those who are listening who want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Sure. So you can find me at growinglittlebrains.com. That's my website. My email address is melanie@growinglittlebrains.com. You can meet me there or find me there too if you want to send me a message. I have lots of free blog posts. I have a free AOTA approved course that's for anyone who's thinking about transitioning to early intervention or new grads that are thinking about taking their first job in early intervention. And then I offer small group memberships. I have a membership program that runs yearly and lots of other AOTA approved courses and products and digital products and all sorts of things. So check it out. I've worked hard. Well, Susanna has worked hard on my website. So
It's a great website with so many great blogs, so I think that's a super place to start.
yes, there's a whole list for her again of things that we need to update, but
Good stuff.
great place to find out more about what I'm doing. So
Well, thank you
thanks.
so much for being here. I so appreciate you
Yes.
taking us on a journey, taking us through your story. So hopefully whoever's
Anytime.
listening in the middle of Ireland as they're driving down their road will be like, "Oh, I don't feel so alone."
That's
So
right.
thanks again, Melanie.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.